And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitt. Tonight, we are previewing the Colorado game for the Kansas Jayhawks basketball team. A surprising, I think, ranked matchup, top 20 matchup. To help me take a look at this Colorado team, I have Jack Bosch from Ralphie Report's podcast called At the Buzzer. Jack, how are you doing tonight?
You know, I'm pretty good, Andy. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing pretty good. So it's the first time we're having you on the podcast, obviously. You know, we've been doing this for about 3 years, and I don't think Kansas played Colorado in that time frame. Obviously, old Big 12 foes, but, you know, they've played a few times since Colorado went off to the Pac-12. This particular game, I don't think we really were expecting this to be a ranked matchup between two top 20 teams, but that kind of speaks to how good of a start this Colorado Buffaloes team has gotten. You know, they haven't necessarily played the most difficult stretch here, but they've won convincingly. What has been the key to this Colorado Buffalo success so far this season?
Like I guess every other season, but definitely magnified this year, it's with under Tad Boyle, it's always going to be defensive rebounding. So this team in particular, just because they've played so long together and they know the tenets of the program, they are exceptional right now, at least at defense, and very good at rebounding. And I guess with those two backbones, as Tad Boyle said, you can survive off shooting nights. You can survive games where shots aren't falling, and that's why he's undefeated right now.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the roster, and you talked about, you know, them really kind of knowing how the system works. I don't actually see a freshman on the roster. Maybe there just hasn't been one that played. But you have 11 players that are listed, mostly juniors and sophomores here. I'm seeing a couple seniors, but it seems like this is a team that's been together for a little while. Seems to kind of really know what's going on with Tad Boyle's program, like you were talking about. You know, has that kind of really been the key, the fact that this has been kind of the second year for the majority of these guys, kind of all working together and really kind of knowing how each other works?
Yeah, I mean, like you pointed out, almost the entire roster is returning. There was one graduating senior who played minutes last year, and he was injured for most of last season, Naaman Wright. So pretty much the group that plays for CU now played for CU last year and played for CU in 2017. So this class of 2017 freshmen have played together for 3 years, and that's really what you're seeing now come to fruition, is players like McKinley Wright and Tyler Bay and Evan Batty and Deshaun Schwartz, who've played together for, you know, 60 college games at least. And they came in with talent, and now they have talent plus experience. And that's, I guess, what you're saying translates well on the court. I believe the one true freshman that was in this recruiting class is redshirted, Keyshawn Bartholomew. So it's all experienced players. The sophomores played last year as freshmen. And the true addition this year was a junior college sharpshooter. So he also has played college ball. So really everyone who's playing now has played before, and they know what they're doing and they know where to go. And that's, you know, it's a well-oiled machine right now, at least on one side of the ball.
Yeah. So to kind of talk about that, you know, it seems like the defense is really the calling card for this particular team. You know, how sustainable do you see this being for this team? Like, they haven't to this point yet played a lot of, I guess, offensive juggernauts would be the best way to kind of put it. You know, I mean, the highest rated team according to KenPom that they played was the opener against Arizona State, and mm-hmm. obviously they won that one handily by double digits. But you know, this is going to be a completely new, I think, experience for them playing against Kansas. Obviously, in Allen Fieldhouse is tough enough itself, but you know, this Kansas team that has a guy like Udoka Azubuike down low, who is just a beast down there. How do you expect Colorado to kind of be able to handle that? And what do you think is going to be their approach for trying to handle this offensive onslaught that Kansas has?
Right. Like you pointed out, no one in the CU's played has come close, I think, to Kansas offense, especially because, like you said, Udoka Azubuike down low is just a unique weapon, I think, in college basketball, just in terms of size and skill. But also, you know, guards like Devon Dotson, who's just relentless, constantly attacking, constantly probing. They've gotten a taste of that, but I don't think they've ever gotten 40 minutes of, I guess, a true offensive juggernaut. So I think the defense, like, for CU is translatable. I don't think they'll be as good as they have been. Like, right now they are top 10, I think, in KenPom defensive efficiency, and they are one of the three best teams in the country defending two-point shots. I don't think, especially with the Azubuike coming up, that those percentages and those efficiency metrics will show off against Kansas necessarily, but I don't think it'll also be a, you know, I guess a wide open game. The biggest strength defensively other than Tyler Bay is, I think, the depth, especially down low. There's legitimately four big guys that they can shuffle around and throw at Azubuike just to tire him out at the very least. So while there's no one I think that can match up with Udoka one-on-one, I think the plan would be to hold the big guys for Kansas down long enough just by throwing fresh legs over and over at them, to hopefully score enough to pull off an upset.
Yeah, I guess the real question with that is, you know, Lucas Seward, I believe is how you say his name, is the only guy that height-wise is probably going to be able to do much to affect Doak's shot, especially if he gets the ball up in the air, like up above his head. You know, it seems like really the main way to kind of mess with Doak's shot is to be able to double team him. But how much are they going to be able to throw two big guys down on him, especially if Kansas is playing a four guard lineup?
Well, the nice thing about that is Tyler Bay has the athleticism and, I guess, skill necessary to guard at least 2-5. Depending on the guard, maybe 2-5, though I doubt it with talent like Kansas has. So he's a versatile weapon that can double team or play help side defense as needed for CU. Defensively, he is one of the best players, I would say, in the country, definitely in the conference, the Pac-12 conference. Can he, I guess, shore up against Azubuike in the post? I don't think so, at least on his own, but I would struggle to find a player who can in the country. So, like you said, I think he'll be the help side defender that can help Seward, or there's a 7-foot on the roster, Dallas Walden, who just hasn't played much this year, coming off from an ACL tear, his third ACL tear. So this would be the day, the game that would be helpful for him to take the next step, I guess, in recovery and play meaningful minutes, because he does have the height. He does not have the, I guess, size in general, because Azubuike is just a complete – I mean, he's a load in the post. So
yeah.
I think he's still going to have to get doubled. But the nice thing on CU's side, the one strength they have is they can at least, you know, if people get fouled or legs get tired, they have enough bodies to rotate in and out that I don't think anyone's going to have to take that whole responsibility themselves. Do I think they'll stop Azubuike? No,
right.
But I think there's going to be enough players there.
Right. The question, I think, has always been, can you slow him down enough that Kansas has to turn to three-pointers to be able to kind of keep up?
Right.
You know, it makes me wonder, though, because it seems like the idea is to try to frustrate Doak enough that he's ineffective or starts to get into foul trouble because he's, you know, pushing too much. The question, though, then becomes, you know, how do you deal with a guy like David McCormick then? Are they deep enough to handle essentially Doak and then Doak light? And McCormick is only, you know, gives up 2 inches to Doak. But seems to be doing a lot of the same types of things. It's playing a little bit better defense, especially out towards the perimeter. But really kind of seems to be handling a similar type of workload to what Doak does. He had a huge breakout game against Dayton. I'm sorry, against BYU prior to the Dayton game. You know, and so I don't want to, you know, make it sound like I don't think that Colorado can slow both of them down. But I guess the question becomes, you know, are they prepared to go 40 minutes against two very similar guys who are probably going to end up playing one or the other all game long?
Yeah, I guess my answer would be, you know, there's a reason that Kansas is ranked, I believe, second in the country, right? It's
right.
They have a very good mix of depth and talent that, you know, maybe four of the teams have in the country. So I would say no. I don't think CU has the bodies or the talent to match up with McCormick and then Azubuike for 40 minutes straight. I think you'd find maybe two or three other teams in the country that could do that. So it's going to take some creative scheming or just a off night from one of the two, I think, for CU to have a chance in this game.
I think it also kind of means that they're going to have to lean a little bit offensively on some of the things that they don't necessarily seem comfortable doing. I do want to talk about that, but before I do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. All right, I want to take a look at CU's offense because I was looking at this and there's a lot here that honestly doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Because when I look at their KenPom profile, you know, they are number 62 in the nation. They shoot 37% on their three-point shots, but they only take about 32% of their shots from three. You know, they are a very bad 2% shooting team. You know, they're at 307 in the nation, only making about 43% of their two-point shots. So what is going on with this team that they're taking so many of their shots from two, and they seem to have a fairly good three-point shooting team, or do they have such a good three-point shooting team percentage-wise because they're not taking very many of them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that Boyle made it a priority this offseason to upgrade the shooting, which is why part of the reason why he brought in Maddox Daniels, who shot around 50% at the junior college ranks from three-point range. And he did a similar thing last year with Shane Gatling, and for some reason that didn't translate that well to the Division I level. To answer your questions, I think the three-point shooting at that rate, partially sustainable, definitely will be more efficient than the two-point shots. I do, however, think that eventually that two-point shooting percentage, like you mentioned, it's bottom, what is that, 30 teams in the country, 40 teams in the country.
Right.
That's going to even out. At least I think it might end up below average, but part of that's just because with a lot of the teams that they're playing, they aren't necessarily – I guess juggernauts, right? So Tad's been experimenting a lot with lineups and with offensive play sets that aren't giving the best shot possible. So part of that, I think a lot of that 2-point shooting percentage is coming from the guard slots. So McKinley Wright has been slowed offensively, I guess, comparatively to his other two seasons. He just had, I think it was a 3-for-12 or 3-for-13 night against Clemson the other night. And almost all of that was, you know, floaters or runners in the lane that usually high percentage shots for him that weren't high percentage that night. And you're seeing that, I guess, bear fruit with a lot of the guards this year, where Dalen Kuntz, the backup, similar thing. I think he's shooting less than 20% on the year. I don't expect that less than 20% will continue. I also don't think he'll shoot up to 50%. So on a lot of those guard shots, they just aren't right now. They just aren't, they're in a, I guess, a collective slump, and that might continue, but I also don't expect that to continue at this rate. To your point, the other thing that Tad Boyle always harps on at Colorado is, he always wants to get a post touch in on every possession if he can. He likes to facilitate the offense of the post, especially with players like Evan Batty and Tyler Bray coming in. So part of the reason those threes have been less frequent than the twos is because to get to the three-point shot, he would like to feed it through the post. And sometimes, you know, it's either a turnover or they'll take the two-point shot but get the foul. So there's less threes to go around because a lot of the offense goes into the low block.
Yeah, and I will say, while you were talking there, I did look through some of the individual games, and it looks like, you know, there are some games where they're definitely a lot more balanced. You know, I mean, we've got, let's see, Colorado again. No, that against Arizona State, it was definitely a lot, very, very unbalanced. But against San Diego, you know, they shot 24 threes to 32 twos. And then against Clemson, you know, it was almost even at that point. It was 22 threes to 29 twos. So it definitely seems like when the game plan warrants it, that they are not afraid of taking threes. They just seem to have a lot of, like you were saying, a lot of individual games where it was heavily skewed to the two-pointer. So it makes it seem like they don't take nearly as many. So I was going to say, because it seems like most teams so far this year, with the exception of, I guess, Duke, really, you know, highlighted or tried to go super heavy on three-pointers. Do you think that that's how Colorado tries to attack Kansas, you know, given who they have down low defensively, but also the fact that, you know, it seems like when you have pretty much an automatic two, you know, coming from Udoka Azubuike or David McCormick, almost every time that they touch the ball, you kind of have to take a bunch of threes just to have the opportunity to keep up.
Yeah, I guess that's another interesting question. I would say, to answer that, I guess, under Ted Boyle, the 10 years, it's always been a very player-driven offense, which is why it's been so, I guess, variable, even game to game. He gives his lead guard a lot of latitude and a lot of choice with how the defense is attacked. That works really well when you have a lead guard like Spencer Dinwiddie or McKinley Wright last year, or even his freshman year. But it doesn't work sometimes if you have a lead guard that is either, I guess, reserved or hesitant or you are having an off night. So I would say that I think it makes sense on paper to attack with the threes because it's a more efficient shot than your two-point shot anyways. And it's with the percentages that Colorado's been facing this year or putting up this year, it absolutely makes sense to shoot as many threes as you can. But a lot of that depends on how McKinley Wright feels the game out and how, you know, does he kick it out or does he try to put up a layup on the drive? A lot of that really is game to game, even possession to possession for Colorado, which is, like you said, why it's hard to find a pattern in how they attack these defenses. If I were game planning, I would say absolutely try to shoot threes if you can. The personnel is mostly there. You can usually one through four on CU's team can shoot threes, so you can spread out some of Kansas' size. But I have little faith that's going to be a consistent 40-minute game plan for CU.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can expect them to really push the threes and kind of flip it even. But I definitely think there has to be the threat there because while Kansas has shown the ability to get out there and defend three a whole lot better this year than they did last year, they have really been able to clamp down on the 2-point shooting just because of who they have down low. And they always are able to kind of bring help and, you know, double team guys that are driving and things like that. And so I think there has to be that threat of Colorado taking and making threes consistently to kind of keep them honest on their guys out on the perimeter, you know, to kind of open up those sorts of lanes. So, all right. Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I would say that the one ace in the hole they have is, you know, the best player this year by far for CU has been Tyler Bay. And I guess surprising to everyone, he has shown a willingness and ability to hit threes this year. So if he's at his normal power forward spot, well, I mean, Azubuike plays the five, but spreading out that defense even more, if he starts to stray further and further away from the paint into that three-point line, you get a little bit easier driving lanes. And if they do help, then he's right there and willing to take that shot, which is a nice little, I guess, I don't know what you'd call that.
I definitely think that that's something that Kansas does not handle well is a five-man who plays away from the basket a little bit more. In years past, they've had a guy like Mitch Lightfoot who can play away from the basket and kind of really stick with guys. But he is redshirting this year as a senior, which is a little weird in of itself, but just given the makeup of this team, you know, it really made sense for him. But they don't have a guy like that. Sobe DeSouza has not been able to consistently show his, you know, the ability to play out on the perimeter. McCormick's a little bit better at it, but he's really not that great at it. So, you know, that may be one area where Colorado can take advantage if they can truly spread the floor by getting all five players to play out near the perimeter, if not at the perimeter. That could really open up some lanes for some drives and make it a little bit harder for for Doak or for McCormick to really kind of dominate down low defensively. You know, is that something that they have shown the tendency to even consider at times, or is that something that would be fairly new for this offense?
You know, I guess it depends on who's out there. Lucas Seward, if he is at the five, can absolutely hit threes at a very nice clip. And he is willing to take those, but he's a reserve big. And with the starting lineup they have currently with Evan Batty at the five, he can take threes, but he's much more comfortable in the low block. We'll see if that changes with, you know, a player like as a bookie on the other side, but so you can go five out if they have the right personnel, but it's also a strange inverse where the point guard oftentimes with be it McKinley Wright or Dalen Coons is the worst shooter on the floor. So
that would be weird.
Yeah, it's a little strange. So you know, they can go five out, but it's rare that all five can hit threes at a scary level.
Yeah. All right. Well, so before we get to like predictions for this game or kind of talking about that, I do want to take a look because like I said at the top, you know, this has I think been a little bit of a surprising start for Colorado this year, but what really were the expectations for this team coming into the year?
Well, they were pretty high, at least internally. So, you know, Tad Boyle said even when this class signed 2 years ago that this they would grow together and become what they are now. If people believe them or not, I don't know. I was a little skeptical. I think, you know, I'm a huge Tad Boyle fan. I thought there would be a tournament team. I didn't think they would be this tournament team. So I think they've gelled and progressed a little faster or better than people thought coming into the year, but always the expectation was for this to be a tournament team, and the expectation was for this to be a top four Pac-12 team, something that Tad Boyle hasn't done in his 10 years. So right now they're on pace to be both of those things. We'll see how that shapes up, but the talent is there, which is a rare thing to say if you're a CU basketball fan, and the experience is there. And when you mix those together, you usually have a pretty good team that wins the ones they should and maybe even knocks off a few they shouldn't. So luckily they've avoided most of the pitfalls put in front of them so far. I'm still a little worried about, you know, the upcoming trip to CSU or I guess now it's not even a trap game. Dayton is
right
the same way, just amazing, I guess, as Kansas fans also know. So the schedule set up this year to have a lot of good tests before conference play. The RPI of almost every opponent he's playing is going to be a boon come tournament time. So really they just have to avoid losing the ones they shouldn't. And it looks like with this team, the experience they have coming back and really the leadership that's been lacking in previous seasons should have everything it takes to I guess, be the team that Tad Boyle said they were going to be 2 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think I might have said this on our podcast before, but Colorado has kind of always been a team that I've followed. One, because obviously Tad Boyle, you know, being a former Jayhawk, mm-hmm. kind of just that natural connection there. But, you know, I actually, going through high school, I essentially decided between Colorado and Kansas. You know,
oh, really?
I always kind of liked Colorado as my secondary Big 12 team until they decided to leave. And then I've kind of always followed them a little bit. So it's been good to kind of see them, you know, really, really thrive the way that they have basketball wise in the last few years here. So I'm definitely pulling for them to do some good things. One, because it will, you know, make Kansas' schedule look better if they're a top tier team on it. But I also kind of just am looking for a team like Colorado. They're definitely a lot easier to root for than some of the other teams that are out there. So, but let's go ahead and turn back to the actual game itself. Just a couple more quick questions. Actually, before I do that, I need to throw it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. And we're back. All right. So turning our attention back to this particular game, I want to get from you what you think will be the X factor for this game, the one matchup that will go the furthest towards deciding who actually wins this game.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of interesting. Yes, I think you have strength for strength versus with McKinley Wright and Devon Dotson. So I don't know if that will decide the game, just because they're both, I think, established great players. So it's hard to say that's the next factor. And it's similar down low. Azubuike's a different impact player than Tyler Bay is, but they both generally operate in the low block, and they both are, I guess, they excel in I would say, different sides of the ball. I think Azubuike is a unique offensive weapon. I think Tyler Bay, while he's good on offense, is more of a terror defensively. So, I mean, looking at this game, I think if Deshaun Schwartz decides that he's going to be extremely aggressive and use his 6'7 frame to full effect, I think that can go a long way with helping CU. I think he's a unique offensive weapon. He's so polished, and he always has a move and counter move for almost everything that defenses throw at him. Just the big thing with him has always been tentativeness, so he doesn't like to drive to the three-point line or doesn't take as many shots as I think CU fans think he should. So going into this game, if he decides that this is his moment, or this is his stage, this is his moment, and he, you know, takes more than 10 shots, he's always been efficient, and he makes it more of a inside-out game rather than just being a spot-up shooter and then an occasional driver. If he really takes advantage of the fact that he is a great shooter and takes people off the drive, I think that would go a long way to helping CU just take the offensive pressure off of Brighton Bay, allow them to focus more defensively, and maybe put Kansas on upset alert.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think there's going to be a cakewalk for Kansas by any stretch of the imagination. I think, you know, a matchup you were talking about, Deshaun Schwartz, and I think a guy that might end up getting matched up on him quite a bit, if it's not Marcus Garrett, who, tends to get matched up on some of the better off-the-ball shooters that the opponents have. But Ochai Agbaji, I think, is going to be a good indicator of how this game is going for both teams, because he can play some lockdown defense at times, but there have been times, especially if his offensive game isn't going well, that he can get a little bit lost defensively. If he's not making a big defensive contribution, it means that Colorado is doing quite a bit right to kind of shake him. But he's had multiple games where he's just gone off, but he also has some games where he kind of just fades in the background a little bit more than you expect. He came on really strong for Kansas last year as a true freshman. So I thought there were some pretty big expectations for him this year, and he's definitely shown flashes of being able to live up to those. But the question is, has been, you know, how much consistency are we going to see from him? So if he's in this game and making a big impact early, you know, it could get out of hand pretty quickly. But if Colorado is kind of able to rein him in and keep him from having a huge impact, you know, that probably means that they're doing quite a few things right that might, you know, make this a little bit tighter than most Kansas fans want to think that it will be. I think he'll be a good weather vane, essentially, to see how the winds are blowing for both of these teams. All right, so
yeah.
Final question for you. Ultimately, you know, it comes down to what we think is going to happen. What is your prediction for this game? Do you think this is one where Colorado keeps it close for all of the game and it's a nail-biter down? Or do you think that this is finally where Colorado starts to see a few of the issues that they might have defensively, against this kind of Kansas offense that is out there? Not saying that they're going to, you know, fall apart completely defensively, but to finally start to see where some of those cracks might be, where they need to kind of short up going into conference play.
So I think last I looked at KenPom, they projected this to be a 7 or 8 point win for Kansas, which I think is actually a little on the low side. As much as this team has experience, as much as this team is a little bit different than the previous Tad Boyle iterations. Generally, Colorado basketball, especially even under Tad Boyle, not especially, but even under Tad Boyle, struggles on the road a little more than other college basketball teams do, partially just because the home field advantage that CU has is so prevalent. So on the road, this team has been, they turned around near the end of last year, but it still hasn't been the same team as they have been at home. I think that definitely rears its ugly head here. I don't think it'll be I don't think it'll be a 20-point blowout or, something that embarrasses CU. But I also don't think it'll be 4 or 6 points near the end. I think Kansas wins pretty handily, just around like 10 to 10, maybe 10 points, 12 points. Partially, just you know, they have a dangerous combination of outside shooting, a point guard that never quits. I don't know if he always makes the right decision, Dotson, but he's definitely always making decisions, and that's always hard to defend. And then a complete load in the low post that's hard to stop no matter who you are. So I think if Azubuike stays clean, you know, if he stays on the floor for as much as he should, I think it's a pretty comfortable win for Kansas. I don't necessarily think that's an indictment against CU this year. I just think it shows that this is Kansas basketball and Colorado basketball scraping up against a different echelon than they normally do.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, you know, like you were saying, Devon Dotson, he doesn't always make the right decision, but typically, you know, if he makes a bad decision and gets a turnover, there's been multiple times this year where he then goes and immediately steals the ball right back. So he's right. Definitely been able to show the resiliency to come back from any kind of bad decision he does make. I actually am a little bit more optimistic for Colorado than you are. I mean, Kansas at times has shown, you know, it, like a lot of Kansas teams, they just don't necessarily have that killer instinct at times. And so, you know, I think there's a very good chance that they'll get up by, you know, say 12 with roughly 5-6 minutes left, go on a, you know, have a big lapse of focus, or, you know, just have something go wrong for them that snowballs a little bit. You know, I could very well see this being a 1 or 2 point game with just a minute or two to go. And if the lead does swell back up to, you know, 8 or 9 points, it'll be because of good free throw shooting, because they've gotten either Doak hits, you know, a few, which would be a big surprise. You know, he's been doing better recently, but still is not a very good free throw shooter. Or, you know, they're able to get it in the hands of their better free throw shooters, who are then able to make some very good shots to kind of push that lead back out. But, you know, I think this is going to be a nail biter for Kansas. I just think that Colorado's defense is probably better, with the exception of Duke, probably better than any defense that Kansas has seen so far this year. You know, and they do have enough. Like, really the only question is going to be, how much is Colorado going to embrace the strengths that they have to be able to kind of make those mismatches? When Kansas has won big, it's been typically because the opponent has gone completely cold. But, you know, I don't see this Colorado team as, you know, if they are worse than a team like Dayton, as very much worse than Dayton. And Dayton took Kansas to overtime, you know, even though they were shooting very cold from three. So, you know, I think this Colorado team has a lot more talent than most people nationally would think. And like you said, having that experience of guys who have played together for over a full year, you know, in the same kind of roles really does help, will really be something that they can lean on. I think this will kind of be, you know, the game where people really start to take this Colorado team seriously. I don't think that they win the game, but I do think they keep it closer than a lot of people are expecting. I'm thinking it's probably going to be a 5 or 6 point win for Kansas. You know, and ultimately this is going to give Colorado, like I said, a lot of good information about where they do have weaknesses on defense, you know, where they can kind of go ahead and shore that up. I honestly, looking at this Colorado team, would not be surprised if they finished 1 or 2 in the Pac-12 this year. I actually think that they look that good. I also don't have a lot of faith in a lot of the other Pac-12 teams, just given the way that they've kind of fallen apart. But, you know, I think that this could be something special for this Colorado team. So I'm looking forward to this game. You know, I'm not realistically too worried, you know, about Kansas losing this game, but it's definitely going to be one that's going to look good for them at the end of the year, as I think that Colorado is going to go on to do some really good things. So, all right. Jack, where can the, you know, if people want to get more information about this Colorado team, where can they find you and then the work that you do online?
Yeah, so I am mostly active on Twitter, just at Jack Barsch, B-A-R-S-C-H. And everything I write, or my other co-host, Sam, for At the Buzzer Podcast, he does a lot of the basketball writing. He will write also on the Ralph Report banner for SB Nation. So if you just look up Ralph Report or search it anywhere, that's Ralphie, like the mascot, R-A-L-P-H-I-E, Report. You're going to find anything there that you might want. It's a fun time right now, you know, brand new coach, same with KU. They have Les Miles, we have Mel Tucker. And you know, signing period's coming up. Basketball's in full swing. These are both ranked teams. So if you want to look at anything like that, that's where it's going to be.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Jack, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talks. And once you do get subscribed, you'll get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you do have any comments or questions, suggestions, you know, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, please do let us know. You can email me, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can contact me on Twitter at rockchalkpod. If you do go out there and subscribe, please give us a rating and a review as well. 5 stars, nice comments would be great, but if you can't, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys to get you guys all the information, provide a little bit of entertainment at the same time, and get you guys, you know, everything that you need to know about this team and everybody that they end up facing. So, but we'll go ahead and leave it there. Jack, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.